I'm Kelvin Thompson. I'm joined up here on the dais with my colleagues, Tom Cavanaugh and Karen Peterson. They'll both speak with you in just a second. So we literally are going to do an episode of TopCast, the Teaching Online podcast, live in front of you guys in just a few minutes. But first, we wanted to kind of frame out this whole TopCast thing. Then we'll turn our attention to the episode, and then we'll have a little bit of intimate chat with those of you assembled with us today at the end. So why a podcast?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think that part of it is because we're both sort of podcast fans, right? I listen to a lot of them when I'm jogging or I'm driving around, and I was searching for a podcast on online learning and couldn't really find anything that spoke to me. There are a few things out there that that were pretty good, but some of them were a little long, or some of them were not quite in the wheelhouse of the world that we live in, like the OLC world. And you know what they say, if you can't find it, do it, right? So we did. We decided that we'll give it a try. And we talked a lot about the format, and we're definitely open to any feedback if any of you have actually listened. How many of you have actually listened to a TopCast? Bless you. Bless you. We're open to feedback on the format. We have been very intentional about the time. We try to keep it between 20 and 25 minutes, something that you could, you know, listen to on your drive home or while you're eating your sandwich or something at your desk, like I do. And the format between Kelvin and I, some of that has been driven just by what we think we can do. So we haven't brought in a lot of guests because the logistics of that probably means that it would be harder to do it.
We don't have the budget to fly in that many people.
That's right, yeah. Although we have actually, you'll hear in future episodes, we've been recording various people around the conference this week, and so we'll do some of those special guest interviews in the near future. We'll unveil a little behind the curtain. We usually record more than one at a time. So, yes. And then we just kind of hold them until it makes sense to release them. This one, though, will be, the plan is for this to be released in a couple weeks as the November one. So, we would ask that if you have any particular questions or comments that you want to throw out, you can be on the podcast today if you like. Nobody's compelled, but you're welcome and encouraged. So another thing that we thought about was if we were going to do a podcast, you know, who cares what Tom and Kelvin have to say and who are they? But if we could somehow interest the Online Learning Consortium to think that this might be a valuable kind of resource for the community, then it, frankly, for us, it's a little bit of a larger platform. And if they found value in it, then maybe it's one more offering to make available to the membership. And so that's how OLC got involved. We started talking about would it make sense? Can we start to align some of the thematic topics? And I'll let Karen address, you know, why you think this belongs on the OLC website.
Well, I think it's really sort of an interesting journey because I joined the Online Learning Consortium in February as the Chief Knowledge Officer. A little shorter title, you two, but thank you. And one of the first conversations I had in that new role was with Tom and Kelvin. And the interest they had in moving this initiative forward. And when you're new in a position and somebody hands you something exciting and interesting, you say, yes, we would love to do that. And so that's really, that really made a difference for us because we feel the conversations that are happening are conversations that the Online Learning Consortium community is interested in. And so to be a platform to bring this content to more of our membership was a critical decision for us. So this was really one of those no-brainers, if you will, with regard to bringing forward the idea and finding a way in which to provide a platform and showcase this work. So I think that's one of those things I would just say to each of you here and our virtual audience. as the Online Learning Consortium, we're a small organization, and we look to the community to help us build the content, the conversation, the engagement, the interaction, all of those things. And so if you have an idea of a direction that you feel we should go, by all means, reach out, because this is your community, and we want to do things that will impact on your work. So, Tom, I wanted to ask a question of you as you were talking, because there were a lot of things that the both of you said that were really intriguing to me. But one point that you made early on was, and when you tie it in with the leadership, it's about sort of how do you think about that when you're talking about something at scale? Because you use that word, and I think as a leader, what goes through your mind as you're thinking about the future with regard to, your institution and sort of that scale question?
Yeah, you can't work at UCF without thinking about scale.
That's so
all
true.
The time. Even if we start something small, like a pilot, like our adaptive learning pilot, which frankly is a small pilot right now. It's a couple of classes, a couple of faculty. Even when we start something like that, I get continual pressure, both that I put on myself, but as well as from Joel Hartman, about if this goes, how will this scale? If this takes off as we want it to,
right.
How will we support it from an infrastructure and human support standpoint? But also, you have to look at like business models, licensing models and stuff. So yeah, something that we can afford to license something for a pilot. But if suddenly this goes to scale and we're paying a per FTE charge and we've got 63,000 students, that's not FTE, but it's a lot, suddenly can we not afford it anymore? And why should we even start it if we know that if this takes off, it's not going to work? So we do have these conversations all the time. But if I can expand beyond just my own parochial UCF view, I think that when we're talking about some of these solutions, we have to look across the space at scale. I mean, that's what the Gates Foundation is all about. They want to scale innovation across all kinds of institutions at all different levels to serve a very specific underserved population.
Yeah.
Great. So I'm going to turn it over to the audience. And those of you that in our virtual audience, if there's something that you would like to ask the two of them or have a comment, here I come with the microphone. So on my way.
I hate to ask the question, but what are you doing about transcripts? Are you publishing them? What's your plan for that, for ADA compliance?
So you mean of the podcasts?
That's right.
Oh yeah. I was back into micro-credentialing.
I know.
I was like, well, so then you got the publishing.
I'll give you my registrar's email, and you can talk.
Yes, no. Right.
You know, it's funny. We have talked about this.
We have talked multiple times.
We have, yeah. We haven't gotten around to it yet. But
no.
Yeah.
What a crappy answer, Tom.
I know.
That's horrible.
And we talk about ADA a lot. In fact,
we really do. Well, not in those terms, but accessibility and universal design.
Our team just won the You Do It, the Effective Practice Award for You Do It, which is an accessibility tool.
And Karen Tinsley Kim, who got up and accepted the award on behalf of herself and Jacob Bates, wrote us an email and asked a very pointed question in a longer paragraph form than you just did.
She was the one who's been pushing us for this.
Yeah, that's right.
We will get around to it at some point.
It's a challenge. I mean, I don't think either one of us means to be flippant about it, because we seriously really do care a lot about this and are very engaged with our Student Accessibility Services Office and try to be proactive about this. But it's kind of like when we deal with video production. We try to work from scripts. Anything that comes out of Tim Reed, our producer sitting here, anything that comes out of Tim's shop is captioned out of the gate, unless it's extemporaneous content. And then we're in this weird gray space, because no one is funded for that. We don't have staff to transcribe. Our Student Accessibility Services Office can only deal with accommodations, not with proactive in advance kind of stuff. The faculty member, you could say, well, all right, well, he or she should do it. Well, then, unless they're super motivated, they're not going to do it. And so that's a challenge. And so, and I think in that same vein, as we started doing, this is all extemporaneous. We have maybe on a good day, we have some notes in front of us, but we don't script this. Yeah. You know, actually, that was scripted. It was amazing, right? If it was, we would absolutely have this stuff captured.
And one last comment on that is that we've got limited resources in our department to deal with accessibility issues, and we point them all at four-credit courses.
And our faculty and our students.
We just don't have the bandwidth right now to do stuff like this.
And we face the same challenges. Where our legal office has drawn the line is when it is for public. Anyone could get to this. Yep. It has to have either captions or transcriptions. And if it's for a limited or private within your own course, it doesn't, unless the student asks for the accommodation. Yep. But anything that's put out public, we have to do the...
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that from other institutions as well. And I guess I would say thankfully that has not hit us in quite that way yet. But we need to be working on it. Honestly, I welcome that as a reminder that we cannot let that lie fallow. We must work on that. We have software that purports to be excellent at speech to text and all that, and it turns out it's not. And I've personally worked with it hands on, and it takes an hour plus to clean up 6 minutes of an audio recording after going through the software. And so, it's tough. No easy answers. You ask hard questions. Yeah.
Thanks for that.
But thank you for that. Seriously.
Yeah.
You restated the socioeconomic statistic, the 77% versus 9%. A big question, thinking about online digital education, whatever kind of qualifier we're using to describe what we all do, to what extent... is digital and online education, what are the things that are positioning it? For instance, increasing access to people. What are some things we need to be wary of? For instance, some of the learners who are most in need of highly relational face-to-face learners might be the lower economic students. There's some research out that suggests that, yet those are the students that we're kind of targeting. Are we devaluing a degree by kind of targeting this lower population but producing something that isn't really personalized? Anything you want to talk about that idea?
There was that study that was done at the Washington Community Colleges that kind of said what you're saying. And I think there are a couple things in tension with each other there. One is, maybe that there are certain student populations that need a certain pedagogical strategy like that. But these are also students that may be working or have family obligations, non-traditional learners, or just simply don't have the ability, like maybe they don't own a car, to get to campus or something. So online learning offers them access to an education that they would otherwise not have access to. And so that maybe is in tension with some of the pedagogical strategies that maybe work better face-to-face. And I think that's just something we're all going to have to collectively work on. I don't know, do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. But I think I would maybe add that I think we've got to be careful with any group of people to lump all of them into one bag, right? And to say, well, this is our low SES strategy or something. And I think so diversity is good. I think if we're doing, personalized learning or these strategies, I think fine, and be attentive to whether we are unintentionally segmenting out a particular subpopulation, but at the same time, not ruling out other modalities and other course strategies and so forth. And I think having the dialogue, we do pretty well, I think, at UCF with kind of on certain topics, with being cross-institutional and task force-y, I mean, in a good way, not in a politically expedient way, and really trying to solve problems. And I think things like that, if we're going to take, say, access seriously, then that's what it's going to take. It's going to be it's a war fought on multiple fronts, I think.
And I always say to folks that I may have distributed learning in my title, but not everything should be online, yet a lot more can work online than you think.
No, that's true.
I think that there are ways to have really effective, high-touch social interaction online. That's harder to do at scale. But you can do it online probably a lot better than a lot of people think. It just takes work.